Hello and welcome back to the PLO Happy Hour podcast. What you hear there is the nice, beautiful sound of a crackling of a beer in the dawning of the PLL postseason. Hosting is your boy Kevin Brown alongside Dan Kaplan. We got a fun podcast here today. We've got some injury news with how much does Eddie Glazner and his heel injury impact the Redwoods defense. We've got playoff implications, scenarios, all of that jazz coming up. But Dan, we start the show with an important announcement. The boys, take it away. Give the listeners some good news.
Well, on the crack, which now lets me talk, I am happy to announce that the boys, aka Kevin Brown and myself, will be making a glorious road trip up to Boston and partaking on scene for playoff day. The triple header, right? All three games in one day?
Oh, triple header, baby. Quarterfinals, shipping up to Boston, September 3rd. Kevin Brown, Dan Kaplan. I mean,
have you ever been to Boston?
What's that?
Have you ever been to Boston?
For the 2017 Final Four.
Oh, wow. I've never been.
The Maryland men and women.
Never been.
Foxborough. Very successful trip for a young broadcast journalist, as I once was. Now I am drinking Bud Light and hosting the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Dan, what are you drinking?
Me, I'm on the summer drinks. I got a summer shandy here, which is hardly a beer, but I had some left over here from the beach this weekend, which were
perfect place for
refreshing on the in the hot sand there.
Does Seattle have beaches?
I'd assume so.
Be nice to get out to a beach sometime in the middle of all that rain. I feel like it's always there, but you know, they are the host of the final week of the regular season here as PLL wraps up in week 11, Seattle, Washington. Dan, we've got some beautiful matchups to look out for, but I want to swing your attention first to the games that transpired in Salt Lake City, Utah at Zions Bank Stadium, the site of the 2020 bubble. Dan, first off, there's four crazy games, a blowout, a couple predictable finishes, and then a really fun Friday night cap between the Woods and the Dogs. Initial thoughts on week 10?
My initial thoughts are between that Friday night, like late night games, and then all these U21 world games, my official like lacrosse clock is totally out of whack. Like, that game ended at like 1:30 or so, like I feel like at our time. And like even since then, I've just been like on the struggle. But man, great game. Obviously, like worth every second of staying up for to watch. It was such a back and forth game that like one or two plays down the stretch could have totally just swung it. Unlike the first game that was a total blowout that I did not see ending, you know, the way that it did. What do you think of that one?
Well, first off, if you're not following Dan Kaplan on Twitter, he is. The game started at 10:30, and like you said, ended up around 1 a.m. Dan's been up before 5 a.m. multiple times this week to watch Japan lacrosse and Israel lacrosse and all these beautiful nations competing at the Limerick Under 21 Championships. But yeah, to answer your question, Dan, I wasn't too surprised. I mean, Atlas has never beaten the Whipsnakes. That doesn't mean I expected that to be 12-1, especially with Baptiste winning the Battle of the Stripe. Shows that, you know, doesn't all come down to faceoffs. Like when you got Kyle Burnmore on top of his game and then Rambo, I mean, what else can you say about him and his last couple outings for the Whips, the two-time champs? That was a quite a beatdown. Took the foot off the gas pedal, so to speak, in the second half a little bit. And then I covered both Saturday games where Archers and Tom Schreiber got back on track against the defending champs in the Chaos. And Chrome, they got So it's kind of cool that both teams spoke about this post game, because you don't really, like other sports, you hear a lot of like, oh, that's like a storyline that's manufactured in terms of pitting two teams against each other, making it a rivalry, making it like a revenge kind of game. At least a player or a coach from both winning teams on Saturday spoke about the revenge factor in terms of Archers. It was at Utah last season where Chaos ousted them from the postseason. Cannon's Chrome was, if you remember, the last regular season game, the last professional game for John Galloway, Joel White. And they retired after losing that one to Paul Rabel and Lyle Thompson. That game got the Cannons into the 2021 playoffs. So it's cool to see them both kind of exact revenge in those games, whereas the fourth quarters weren't quite up to the Friday night standard set by the Woods and Dogs. I guess the fourth quarter wasn't the best part about that game, to be honest, but the whole game was really fun to watch. Glazner going down, Redwoods still battle back. I get this like feeling of like, I mean, covering objectively, but when you're not covering it, you're like, you sway between which team the root for when these momentum swings happen. That Garrett Eppel hit sent Twitter ablaze when he got Sours a little late there. And then you're like, ah, I'm kind of out on the Redwoods. Then Eddie Glazner goes down. You see Jack Neer helping him off the field. They've rallied. They're like, oh, and then Rob Pinnell hits that crazy, sick question mark. Bertrand's in the behind the back. I'm like, oh, I'm back on the Woods train. It was an awesome game to follow.
Yeah, that game particularly for the weekend was really fun. But to your point earlier about teams referencing like previous years and rivalries and all that type of stuff, I think that's actually really, really important. Like if you think about the, you know, bigger sports, like the main market sports, like people still talk about, you know, Lakers Celtics from the 70s, you know, like those types of rivalries are just lasting and I think are important to start creating more and more buzz and hype around the league. But, you know, a rivalry interests any sports fan, almost regardless of the sport. Like if I'm sitting down and someone said like, oh yeah, here's a huge rugby game, you know, like a sport that I'm not totally like invested in or interested in, but then they say like, oh yeah, these two teams hate each other, they're the biggest rivals of all time, like immediately I'm totally locked in, you know.
Yeah,
feel like those types of things are important for the league,
especially. So Mike Rabel spoke about this with me, plug the Q&A I wrote after week one, go check it out. But he was, one of his proudest accomplishments is like, once you have these cameras in front of these guys' faces for like four seasons, they're going to start just like, all right, this is normal and I'll act normal and I'll let my guard down kind of thing. They've been so good about the access. They understand it's like helping the game and helping fans get into it more, like you just said, and getting kind of more comfortable like that. Lacrosse needs more personalities to be like, all right, this is how it is. This is like, this is what I feel about this other team. You know what I mean? Not just like the, oh, we went out there, played hard, did our job, and time to put the ball back in the net kind of hockey answer. So it is cool to see like the personalities and that kind of stuff come out with all that stuff. But yeah, on the field wise, Tom Shriver, we got to talk about this game. We got to talk about what. So, three plays I'm going to ask you about.
All right.
Shriver.
Okay.
Two of them were lefty on the run shots.
Yep.
All right. So, the first lefty on the run was around a screen. He got freed up for a second. Really quick release on her hand. Kind of low shot. Decent. Second one I want to ask you about was a lefty on the run shot that, you know, he just gets downhill. He's super athletic. He's always sprinting. Shriver being Shriver. Amazing sidearm through traffic on the crease, paints the pipe.
Paul had eyes.
Third play, behind the back, right to Holman, a la Rabel to Paske back in the Cannons days. I mean, what was your favorite play?
It's definitely number three, the behind the back feed inside to Holman.
Really? Over the second? Yep,
over both of the down the alleys to his left hand. I already knew that. I mean, I guess I already knew he could probably feed it inside behind the back, but we already knew that Tom Shriver can stick goals on the run unassisted. Boyle did bring up a really good point that, like, he doesn't, once they get the switch on the pick play, he doesn't, like, back him up and, like, take out a big old billboard and say, like, hey, defense, get ready to slide. I'm going to go and score here. Like, he just goes right away, and it's before the defense can account for anything or create a Hawkeye or, you know, really go to it or anything. But my answer is number three, and it's because I watched a ton of box lacrosse over the NLL season. And I gained a larger appreciation for the guy who plays at top center in the 3-3. If you go watch an NLL game or NLL, every single team, it feels like when they go man up, they just put their very best player at top center in like some sort of a 3-3 or like a 3-2 like motion and put two guys on the pipe. And they're able to just work it so well and manipulate the defense, which, like, I have a real appreciation for. You figure out the defense, figure out everything they're doing. The one thing that they're leaving you, you take advantage of. And it happens to be that the one thing that they were leaving was a Marcus Holman with a defender in his hands and a behind-the-back feed inside that still ends up in the back of the goal. You know, like, pretty good defense, but Tom Shriver don't care. He takes advantage anyways.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, too, because, you know, like, he takes a step and, like, starts to look the other way to deceive the defense a little bit. I tweeted about Rob Pinnell's fourth assist when he is in it was like a slow break. Whoever brought the ball up on defense got it to him across the point. He sweeps across.
Yeah.
Didn't win his matchup. But what he did see was Jules rushing out of the box with a step on the guy.
Yeah.
Then he disguised it well. He ran back at Ben Randall. A little roofie off the back foot. Oh, it's a beautiful assist. Go check it out. But
it was really similar to the Water Dogs game winner, the Jack Hanna out of the box game winner against the Atlas, where they have an advantage and Courier has the ball. And like 99.9% of players in that moment throw it to Jack as soon as he's open out of the box. But Courier, like, slow plays it to manipulate the defense and draw one before he throws it to him. So he's just like, absolutely, like, hands free and in danger space to just catch and shoot it right away. Like, the whole thing is just made by the feeders there, in my opinion.
That's like the thing about this league. It's like the players are, we know how talented they are, right? Like, well, a select number of guys, 19 dress each week for 8 clubs, right? It's a very small group.
Yeah, it's so
to be elite in that group, you're like 3-4 steps ahead of the game. You're always thinking, it's like the IQ. It's super impressive that they're just like not huffing and puffing and just like can battle the fatigue and just think ahead of the defense like that. So excited for more of that this week, but we got so poor transition there, but I do want to talk about the Cannons Chrome game a little bit.
Yeah, let's get to it.
So Cannons were in it for the majority of it, and then the end of the third quarter, the last few weeks, it seems like they're so close to breaking through and getting that second win. This week, it was Donville getting tons of open looks on the doorstep. He had about five shots, and he converted two of them, but Scarone was just not as much in his head, that he just takes up so much of the goal, and he's so quick with his hands. It was the best Ganon game I think I've seen from him this season, or second best. And there's two sequences at the end of that third quarter where first Tarasenko took it coast to coast after it looked like across the line, replay indecisive, or not conclusive, rather, and then they score man down with a Justin Anderson jump shot to beat the buzzer with 5 seconds left in the quarter. Chrome has this ability to, we saw this against the Cannons at Homewood Field where they completed a crazy comeback, #Chromeback, to just make these full field plays like crazy. It's unbelievable to me. I'm not sure how sustainable that is. And we'll get into kind of the playoff positioning that's upcoming. But, man, just, Cannons really needed that one. Lyle said it after the game. It's like, I asked him, hey, what from this performance motivated you? Or what out of this performance gave you confidence that you guys can get a second win next week, can sneak into the playoffs? Because they got to win by at least 3 goals to raise that goal differential in the standings. That the Chaos have over them for that first tiebreaker.
We're going to have to get to that at some point in this podcast, but how they are 1-8 and still have a chance at the playoffs is just astounding to me. I mean, I guess it's obvious that there's a team that is just 1-1 ahead of them, but still, it just seems crazy. But we're gonna have to talk through some of these playoff scenarios here.
We'll get to it. My whole point, so Lyle's like, yeah, we're playing better lacrosse each week. It's like he's befuddled just as much as I am. But you know, it's the middle of the field. It's kind of just the way this roster is constructed. But yeah, you know, you brought it up. Let's get into it. The playoff scenarios are pretty interesting in that. So the Cannons and Chrome both play, or Cannons and Chaos both play on Sunday this week. The last day of the PLL regular season. So Chrome, Redwoods, Archers, Water Dogs will determine more so the championship series spots, the top four, and then we get into the last playoff spot that's up for grabs. Seven teams make it, one doesn't, one gets a bye. Whipsnakes have already secured that bye 2 weeks ago. Chrome secured their spot, but they're not secured in the second spot, or the second seed rather, because they're at 6-4, and if they lose, or they're at 6-3, and if they lose, it creates a log jam at 6-4 teams, and then it comes down to all these tiebreakers. So let's get into it a little bit, with starting with the Sunday games, and we'll work our way backwards. But you mentioned it, the defending champs. Or let's start with the defending champs against Atlas, rematch of the 2021 semifinals. Man, imagine that it'll be the first time, I'm not sure about MLL history, but first time in the PLL that the defending champs won't make the postseason. If, because the Cannons will be especially rooting for a blowout here, right? Like, if they win by like a couple, they can still hope Atlas runs up the score on Chaos to get in. But
which, after two losses in a row, if I'm the Chaos and I'm the Atlas coming in on two losses, like that game needs to start off in the Chaos way, in a big time way. You know, like if it comes out and it's Atlas early and they have two losses, and that like seed of doubt starts creeping in for the Chaos early, like it might be trouble there. And I wouldn't want to see them, a pissed off Atlas scoring offense off of two losses. Like, that worries me a
lot. Let me pose it to you like this. Would you rather play a team that is 8-1, has their spot solidified, is getting praised left and right, and really doesn't have much to play for? Maybe they play their backup goalie. Maybe they sit Rambo. Maybe they sit a couple starters to play it safe. Speculating. Or would you rather play a team that's hungry, lost three of their last four, I believe, and needs a game to get their momentum back for the postseason?
So generally, desperate lacrosse scares me. Like the team that's desperate and needs it the most typically is like something that I would see as a threatening force. But if you've been paying attention to the PLL picks this year, you've seen that theory has not panned out so much this year. You know, like I think that right now you could probably just kind of put your eggs in the basket of the teams that have kind of been leading so far. And I need to start taking my own advice a little bit there, but generally, I feel like you're right. Like, the desperate lacrosse is threatening, but right now I'm kind of getting back onto the train of pick the powerhouse and, you know, let that ride.
So, Whipsnakes cannons. I'm not sure how much the Whipsnakes are going to try in this one. But if they do, it's...
It's in their DNA, though. They would have to... Like, to get Matt Rambo not to try, they have to not trust him. You know, or to get Zed not to go...
Right, like, it wouldn't be about... Because Rambo's got that, like, you know...
Yeah, they're just... Yeah. Like, they are on these 19-man rosters for a reason, and part of that reason is they're just too alpha to take, like, plays off, you know?
Well, plus with the bye week, you don't want to go in... 2 weeks rusty.
Yeah, they have plenty of time to recover after it.
So it is a difficult question between like who I would rather be between the cannons and chaos for sure. But to your point, it's so hard to predict, right? It's two teams that are super desperate. Chaos have been toe-to-toe with their last couple opponents, and Blaze referenced this post game. By the way, he's on the injury list this week, so he's listed as questionable for a lower extremity. There's like a big crease collision, I know, in that last game, but it's gonna be crazy. It's and he came up limping up with that right knee of his, but he was asked post game, he's like, oh, but yeah, kind of brush it off, you know.
He plays through it, whatever. Like, he's on. Yeah.
If Dylan Ward's been playing with the broken thumb for half the season, then Reardon, he'll definitely. I mean, goalies are lunatics to begin with, so
for sure.
No, but he referenced this that the last two fourth quarters, the Chaos were in it, and then they just couldn't score offensively, and they let in three or four goals, and boom, the game was away from them, and it was chasing the game too much. So I think it's going to be close, but these games are going to be tough to predict for this week. What, give me some hot takes, because I'm being too familiar.
For this upcoming week?
Who makes it, cannons or chaos?
I think the chaos make it. I don't think that the cannons get the jump. I think the Whipsnakes handle business, and the cannons don't win by more than three goals.
I think, yeah, it's.
But I don't think that's
pretty feasible. That say it again.
I said, but I don't think that's a hot take.
No, it's not, and I even less of a hot take is that it could be just a super anticlimactic Sunday of both teams losing. Right, it's both teams lose, chaos make it, and they're 17.
And to the point we were making earlier, like, there's probably an argument to be made that the Atlas are the desperate team. Like, they're desperate to go in as a team that, like, has championship aspirations and make a statement. You know, like, having said, we're sitting there at 5-2, now sitting here at 5-4. And, like, if you think back to the first couple of weeks, and, like, even if you think back to the first couple of PLL podcasts, like, our reactions to the Atlas, and, like, just fan reactions to the Atlas, like, they quickly went from, like, you know, the league's baby to a team that is sitting here at 5-4 and tied with three other teams, you know, like, so I feel like they could be, you know, kind of twisted. There's an argument to be made that they're actually the desperate team, and then come in and just, like, you know, Sunday is all bulls, horns up.
PLL has this awesome team predictions tab, or below the PLL standings on their team or their league website. Joe Keegan tweeted out a couple times last 2 weeks. I think it's been the Archers both times. If you've seen the Squid Games, you've definitely laughed at the meme where the guy's holding the other contestant, if you will, and then it's about saving the cannons' probability to make the playoffs. But right now on the website, it's listed as 7.74% to make the postseason for the cannons, and the league's given the chaos a 92% advantage.
So I always understood the point of the meme, that, like, there was the guy that's, like, holding the other guy up. So, like, I got it, but I did not know what that was from. I had no clue.
Okay, so Squid Games, that was like...
I've heard of that. I know it's a Netflix.
Listeners have had plenty of time, so this shouldn't spoil anything. So if you haven't watched it, then skip this part, skip like 2 minutes of the podcast. What happened? The scene is, it's like one of their first games and they're all getting like, you know, shot at. And if you don't stop in time, it's like a stop and go game. Then if you don't stop in time when before the like robot turns around, then boom, you're eliminated. And this guy was like about to fall and the guy like held him. So he stopped.
Got it.
That's Archer's saving the canon season there. If they do, they Sean Quirk owes Bates big time. Cause I've referenced a lot in my writing this season, but the number one pick is kind of up for grabs, barring any expansion in terms of the canons dealing that to Atlas. So a lot at stake this weekend in terms of next year's college draft.
And for people who may not understand how that works, why don't you give a quick recap on how that happened?
So how that came about, to go all the way back, the canons trade for Paul Rabil as their first player as an expansion club for the PLL actually turned into the second pick in the 2021 draft for Atlas. That kind of depleted some assets for the Canons and helping with some of the other deals they've made since. That pick became Chris Gray. The Canons didn't have a first round pick. Sean Quirk was feeling, you know, a little left out of the party. Everyone's making picks left and right here. Boom. He makes a draft day deal to get the 10th or the 11th pick, which ended up becoming Bubba Farin, D-mid out of Maryland for a year, 4-year offensive midi before that. And then in the next round, he selected a backup goalie by the name of Colin Kirst, coming off a great season for Rutgers. So Colin Kirst hasn't started yet or played any really meaningful minutes, and Bubba Farin's been, you know, one of their bright spots, I'd say, of their season. I think he's been really athletic and turning it on, had a great Utah homecoming, but that pick can become, you know, like Sam Hanley, some of these other crazy good prospects. So the Atlas have the rights to the Canons first round pick, and if the Canons finish in last place, then the Atlas have the number one overall pick in the 2023 college draft.
Got it.
And even if they don't finish in last, I mean, if they're bounced as the seventh seed, they'll be second or third pick for the Atlas, and they won't have a first round pick regardless. So it's kind of been a tough season for personnel, for upper management, Lyle Thompson, all around for the Canons. But the transition out of that, and as I stumbled explaining most of that.
No, I'm
listeners, if you
much appreciate it for the fans, not for me, who already knew.
Listeners, if you haven't read Chris Rosenthal's latest column, it is an absolute peach. He wrote about an ode to the record holder for appearances at the pro field level. I'm going to quiz my co-host, Dan Kaplan, in a second here. Great little ode to him. Dan, who holds that record with 199 games played so far?
Well, I did see the cover of it was Brody Merrill. So
okay,
that was tipped, I guess. If there's any other hidden nuggets in there that, you know, you can quiz me on, you're probably going to end up with a silly answer. But that one I did see.
Yeah, I gave you the softball at the start. So he's 5 of this stat away from breaking another record. You know what
that is? It's a ground ball. He has that, right? Oh, he's ground balls.
Right. 5 ground balls this week, and his 200th game gets him the all-time ground balls record, which is pretty phenomenal for a non-faceoff guy to get. As Chris Rosenthal explained, the next guy is Matt Abbott, and he's in the player pool, and Hartzell is after that. I believe, if I have Rosie's story right, and then Scott Ratliff is 3 10 seasons, he's got like 600 less. You know, it's crazy what he's done in his career. You know, he's never won an NLL championship. He won a couple MLL championships with the Nationals, and I think the Rattlers there for those golden seasons. But man, if he ends this note on like a perfect 200 mark for 200 games played, breaks the ground balls record, it would be kind of like Rabel leaving after breaking the all-time points record. But part of me feels like he loves playing the game too much, that like unless his body starts failing him, he's not gonna retire.
I don't know if you saw that slide to the Dylan Molloy inside role this weekend.
Yeah, he's not done.
That's a young man's collision right there. Full speed, 100%, just like instinct takeover, and then boom with Dylan Molloy, who's not exactly a little fella. And obviously he gets the job done on that slide. It was a great play. But that play right there tells me he's got more in him. He's got more years. He's coming back.
I remember him lighting up some rookie last year, or maybe it was like Bucaro from Atlas or something. He let him know about it. He just like ran through him, did like the AI step over across his helmet. Like he still has that like fiery, like competitive side. And like the build to just light people up like that.
Oh yeah.
So it'll be a sour note to end on if Cannons can't get it done. But let me give you a couple more questions, right, Dan, if you don't mind. A little trivia segment for you. This player is 5 goals away from passing Kevin Lavelle to move into the top 5 all-time total goals.
Pro field is it Will Manny?
It is not. Will Manny is, quick math, 20 goals? No. He's about like 18 or 19 goals.
It's not. It's not his partner in crime, Marcus Holman, is it?
Marcus Holman is a little further down the list, actually. Marcus Holman is a little closer up the list. He's actually, that is a correct answer. He's tied with this other player I was thinking about.
There's someone else, too, that I have to guess?
Well, you got one of the correct answers, so I'm not going to make it.
No. I just need another second.
I just told you, if you listen. No, I'm not going to repeat it.
All right, who is it then? If you already said.
Well, I'll rephrase it.
Okay.
This player is 30, 20, 27? 20, all right, this is such a bad segment for doing math on the fly here, but this player is in fourth place all time in assists. So pretty balanced score.
It's Pinnell, right? Did this just happen?
Yeah.
I'm crushing this trivia.
I did not major in math, as you all can tell. but PLL and Sarah Griffin just did a great story on Kieran McArdle being like an underrated guy. We've talked in our Slack messages.
Well, I guess there's proof that he didn't come to mind at all. Not one time did he.
No, he wasn't the answer. I was kind of transitioning out of it. But he's 13th in 9 seasons. Kieran McArdle's put up a sneaky 382 points. 241 goals. Pretty awesome.
So I was actually coaching with Drenner when he was on the Florida launch with McArdle. And I remember he would come back from like games or like training camp or whatever and just be like, dude, like Kieran McArdle. Like I would nerd out and ask him a million questions. Like, who's the best player? Like, shoots at the hardest? Like, you know, whatever. And but he would always like give Kieran a bunch of credit. And he always talked about how good Connor Busick was. And if you go back and, like, if you had it within you to go back and watch some of those Florida launch games, like, Connor Busick in those times, like, he was just such an animal. Like, just Max Seabald-esque running all over the field, getting downhill. Like, but those two guys, he would always come
back and give a bunch of through people, not around
them. Oh, yeah.
Then, yeah, Curran's always had this slick game about him where, you know, you look away and he's got 5 points already in the second quarter. Because it's not like he's quarterbacking the offense. He's just kind of moving it along. And
he did
finish it when he had
earth, I feel like, a little bit this weekend, though, with Apple guarding him. Had a little bit of a harder time. But so do most
people. Yeah, yeah. More hype, and then defense is like, all right, let's shut this guy down, right? He made the PLL team of the week too many consecutive times, and then Apple is like,
it does mean that Michael Towers didn't have to deal with Apple, though, you know, for what that's worth.
Yeah, was he coming out of the box a lot too, right? He's still hybrid.
I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I think it's to do with his like hydration. Like that whole like issue continues to happen. So they were like, all right, well, we need to put him on like a LeBron James plan.
No, he said as much too. He was like, I can't play a full 48 minutes.
Yeah, like as hard as he does. So it's like they steal reps when he's in, when he comes out.
Honestly, yeah, it helps the offense more. It creates more mismatches.
And it'll be even more dangerous, I feel like, when Ryan Brown comes back too. And he's like one more person that like, is just an off-ball threat for Sowers to find a little bit more so than whoever, you know, else they've been putting down, whether it's been Walker or playing Charlie Kitchen or whatever. Like, both of them are great, obviously, but they're not Ryan Brown.
Oh, 100%. It's a lot of pieces of that offense are really fun to kind of maneuver coaching-wise.
But yeah, you mentioned earlier about the bias, like, while you watch these. Like, I'm totally biased while I watch, regardless of who I'm in. Like, I'm rooting for the Water Dogs to win. Like, Archers, like, just know that I could be covering this game, and I am rooting for the Water Dogs to win.
No cheering from the press box here at Inside Lacrosse, but, you know, hint, hint, wink, wink. This is the Happy Hour podcast.
Yeah, maybe I'm confessing things I shouldn't be, but this line I'm feeling good.
But as we move over to beer number two, let's transition into the next segment here. Dan, we got some exciting games coming up this weekend. As we mentioned, we kind of worked backwards there. Saturday, two championship series games up for grabs in terms of making the top four. But I think more so what these teams are more concerned with is kind of maneuvering into what playoff positioning they can kind of acquire. So as it were right now, Whipsnakes Chaos would be, it'd be Chrome Chaos in the first round. Archers, Redwoods, and then Atlas Water Dogs. Atlas Water Dogs out of those would be the best matchup for the first round. But if you're the Whipsnakes, you have first round bye, you're playing whoever wins that 4-5 game. Who do you want to see in that first or that semifinal in Philly or DC? Sorry about that.
Man, that's a good question. I mean, I have to be feeling pretty confident if I were to see the Atlas again after what happened last time. The Water Dogs, I feel like, are a team that continues to kind of give them troubles from time to time. Like, they, you know, they've split so far this season. I think I would.
Yeah, the only team that's beat them.
I think I wouldn't want to if I was, the one team that's beat them. Hot take is the team that they probably wouldn't want to see. But at the same time, like, I could see it in their DNA to be like, yeah, let's cross them off the list early. And then deal with the rest of the scums that we've already beat all season.
Yeah, knowing them, they'd be like, give us the Redwoods so we can beat them in OT first thing and get to the championship game. But, man, the playoffs are going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Yeah. Just like looking at these matchups, kind of assuming the Cannons don't make it. It's a long road to make up the +3 goal differential and beat the best team in the league. Chrome Chaos, sneaky great game. Archers, Redwoods, before the season I said this, they're kind of like the two most complete teams that I think have a shot at winning it all besides the Whipsnakes. The Archers' problem is obviously facing off. I think Justin Matthews improved each week as a rookie. I think the knee down kind of thing helps him. But as much as that is, it's like a 52-second shot clock, and you're going to get possessions in the game. And it's about Tom Schreiber playing on top of his game, which it looks like that's starting to happen. A play that I left out when I was referencing those three plays is his first goal. That set up, I think, all of those. It was a perfect ball movement. Amen got on a nice rotation with the defense sliding. Someone initiated on the wing, and then Amen skipped it over to Shriver for a two-pointer for the first score of the game. That kind of set him up for everything else. I think it got the offense kind of clicking a little bit early. And then Amen really was taken out of it, right? It's not a great Grant Amen game from getting matched up with Jack Rowlett, who's been playing out of his mind, diving after Jackson, all that jazz. But you have Shriver playing on top of his game, Fields starting to find his role and be more served within the offense. What you really need is just Amen to get a good game under his belt this final week here, and then boom, you're in business.
Yeah, and just as a precursor here, like part of the reason we talk about him getting a game under his belt is because he missed so much time earlier in the year, if you're not up to speed on that, with an injury, which now this week they'll have a game, obviously, on Saturday. And then there's another bye, which if you're an Archers fan, like all this extra time that continues to kind of happen here and downtime that you can spare for him to continue to get healthy and, you know, kind of get back to what he was in that 21 season is huge. And then thinking back like 2 weeks ago when that Whipsnakes and Archers game happened, I covered that. And in that press game conference, Staggs, like the first thing he says is how dangerous that group is offensively. You know, it's
he's like, they scare
me. Exactly. Yeah. Bingo. Like word for word, he said, they scare me, you know, like, and so I think that's a team that you mentioned teams you don't want to see down the stretch, a team with a healthy Grant Amen, you know, and a confident offense in the Archers. And then a 21 defensive player of the year down the other end, like, you know, that could be the team that we're talking about that kind of gets going in the right moment. And just,
can they get it done in September? That's the question. If that's the first question, and then the second question is when they, because it seems like defenses are starting to figure out that, okay, we should all just short stick Manny and Holman. They're not Dodgers. They're extremely great finishers. And we just referenced how their status among the all-time greats. The offense did a great job last week. We referenced that Holman screen to set Shriver up for that lefty underhand shot. Using these players who are getting short stick to set up other offense, you know. So those are like the two big storylines with the Archers. And then the Redwoods, we haven't talked about it yet, but
been kind of quiet on them so far in this podcast.
We've given a lot of coverage in recent weeks with Charlie on the pod.
Yeah, no.
We had Rob on the pod, but you know, this week we've been quiet. So Eddie Glazner goes down, and he informed us that it's a partially torn Achilles. And man, that's got to be tough to come back from. He said he's going to try to be ready for the postseason, but that is a huge blow for the Redwoods defense. He's the backbone. He's the communicator. Throw and Finn Sullivan, I thought he did a good job, played his role and didn't make any like mistakes. If you don't really notice someone defensively, that means, you know, they're not like if you're standing out defensively, it usually means he just blew a slide or turned it over on the clear. I thought he did a fine job. But the Redwoods, right when they're starting to click offensively, Rob just had that 8-point game. Everyone's finding their role. Bertrand's been on a roll. Jules is back from injury. Boom. you get another setback with Glazner. It just seems like the season's been full of adversity for this squad. So if they're going to overcome that, it's going to be one of the stories of the season to overcome.
I also think that role he plays is just such an interesting role as the communicator. And like, they have all these certain calls that they're all used to because they've been doing them for 10 years. Some of them, you know, like, it's just an interesting role to have to try and replace, you know, on the fly like this. We'll see how it kind of plays out.
All right, let's get some game picks from you, Kaplan. Preview of your PLL picks you can find on Instagram and Twitter. The Inside Across staff predicting what will happen. Chrome Redwoods, first game of the weekend.
Wow, man. I think this one is the one that I'm the most conflicted on. But I think I'm going to give the edge to the Chrome here just by a hair. I think it's going to be a really close one. But I think I just, when push comes to shove with them, you know, like in these tight games, they've shown that they have the maturity and the experience, even though they've been playing so many like young guys, especially on offense, playing the two rookies. Like, they don't really seem to ever feel, it never feels like the moment is too big for either of them. You know, they both played as competitive ball as you could possibly play. And Nick Turn is like, you know, a surgeon in the Army and or a general. I don't know what he is in the Army, but, you know, like not somebody who's going to be overwhelmed by the moment. And so I just think that, you know, that's been paying dividends for them and they've found a way to edge out close games. And I think that gives me the confidence to take them again in a close game here this week.
This might hurt my pick total, but I feel like, you know, it's good podcasting to disagree with you on everything here. T.D. Erlen, I think, will dominate the stripe. I think this is like a good warm-up game in terms of both teams really don't have much at stake. Chrome locked their postseason spot already. Redwoods are kind of locked into that sixth spot in the playoffs. Not too much to play for. And it'll take quite a big win for the Redwoods to sneak into the top four, goal differential wise. And then Chrome, you know, they play all these close games that I think I'm going to give the advantage to the Redwoods, and I think they sneak it out.
There's something to be said for, like, you're not going to pull out every close game. Like, you need to be able to, like, close some of these out or go on a run in the third to really give yourself some distance and let you kind of manufacture the win in the fourth. That, you know, I see your point. I see where you're coming from.
I'm glad you do. I'm glad
you find one thing to agree on in this podcast.
Let's see if we agree on Archer's Water Dogs. This is, I think, going to be the most exciting game of the weekend where we already know you're going with the Dogs.
I assume we're going to disagree.
Of course. I'm going with the
Archers. Well, give me your Archer's argument, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Well, I think Grant Ament listens to this podcast, hears me saying that he needs to have a good game before the postseason for them to make a viable run at Philly. And boom, Matt Moore pops off. He's been quiet after a great first half of the season. And then he's like fourth, fifth.
Early in the year, we did a podcast with Terry, Joe, Keegan, and I, and we did some picks for Rookie of the Year, MVP, etc. And my early pick for Rookie of the Year was Matt Moore. And then after that, he scored like 8 goals in like 4 games in a row. I was like, oh my God, like the bump is just happening. Then, like you said, it's kind of tailed off. But for a while there, I thought I had snuffed out the dark horse for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, it's been interesting because they've been getting Fields more into the offense. I think he did. As good as he was last week, I think he did hang on to the ball a little too much, and that's been the criticism against him his whole PLL tenure, at least. And then Matt Moore didn't really get too many opportunities. I think he was pulled a lot, so he deferred to Ambler, Field, Schreiber. Well, when Schreiber was out there with him, he was obviously getting the long pull, and they were shorting Marcus and and will. So it'll be interesting to watch how they game plan, but it's all matchup driven. It's all who you can get against the Shoreys, and Border Dogs have some of our most likable short sticks, and my boy Jake Higgins from Maryland, he's having a great debut season, and then we all know the York boy, Matt Witcher, is first one out of the box with the short stick, as Stephen DiNapoli, the captain, told me that he's taken a lesser role, but he's still that leadership in the locker room, which is super important. And of course, they got inside across contributor Nick Acello as the whatever his crazy title is from Andy Copeland on Twitter. That was a funny interaction. Anything else in this game before we move on to Whipsnakes Cannons?
No, I'm with you. I think it's going to be an awesome one. I think it's going to be one of the best games of the year. Both teams 5-4. You know, there's not a whole ton left to be played for besides like jostling for positions here, like you said. But these are two teams that are tied in the records and close in the score differentials. So a big game for both teams going into a bye that's then going to set you up for, playoffs. You definitely want to end the regular season on a win and with confidence and, you know, set yourself up in the best spot possible. So I think if I had, fortunately, I'll get to watch all four. But if there was a world in which I could only pick one of these games to watch, I think that would be the one I'm watching.
Even with the stakes for Sunday's game.
Even with the stakes for Sunday's.
Your Water Dogs bias is showing. Well, I would say
that, and I'm going to assume the results on Sunday, whereas Saturday's result, I think, is more up in the air.
Yeah, we did kind of preview a lot of these, or both these Sunday's games already, but just to go a little more in depth here, Lyle versus Matt Dunn is going to be really fun to watch. And, we asked, there's a great question post-game about JT Giles Harris pressing out against Lyle. And especially in the fourth quarter, he didn't give him any easy touches. And in that last possession, Lyle kind of just like, he didn't let it happen, but he referenced post-game that they didn't really have a game plan to get him the ball. And he's the best player in the world. You got to give him the touch to make something happen. But
yeah, especially the way we could go about this for Sunday is like, what does it like if the Cannons win, what would it have taken? Or if the Chaos win, like, why will that have been the case type of a thing?
Yeah, no, I think Nardella can't go like above 80%, which I think he was close to last time he played Stephen Cowley. And
yeah, I think it was 77.
And then Kyle Bernlohr's got to have an off game, 10 saves or less. Matt Rambo is going to have to defer a lot against, I guess it'll be Kielty. That's the problem with this Whipsnakes offense. They got that like two-headed monster of Rambo and Zed that, especially in that Archers game, you saw him kind of pick out Ratliff a lot. That without Warren Jeffery, that's why they acquired Jeffery and Hossack. You know, like two huge guys range. Just to like take down
even McMahon's
Rambo and Zed. Yeah. Purely from a speculative.
And they've been moving Pulver around a little bit from close to LSM, I feel like. So maybe we see them both go.
He's physical, but, you know, Zed,
yeah,
he's starting to turn it on. You know, he took kind of the whole NLL season to get going. He scored, like, I think it was like 20 goals the whole season, and then he had 20 goals in the whole NLL postseason, which is like less than half as many games. He's incredible. The Whipsnakes offense is like, the scary part is it's like that first half was the first time we really saw everything really start to click, and they still didn't like they can still blow out the Cannons.
The other thing with them, like, we've talked a whole bunch about like different offenses and like what they'll do in these situations or like who they're going to put where. Like, there's no, it's the Whipsnakes are like a football team that line up in I formation and just run the ball down your throat. Like, here's what's gonna happen. Like, they'll tell you what's gonna happen before it happens, and then just do it anyways. You know, like, you know you're gonna see these slam picks. You know you're gonna see a lefty go set a pick for Rambo, whether it's Khan or Gutterding or Brian Cole or whoever they decide to play that week. Like, you know you're gonna see that. You know you're gonna see the same thing on the opposite side. You know Jay Carlson's gonna go inside and like cause a whole bunch of mayhem. Like, you know what it's gonna be. They just do it anyways because they're so good at it, and it's so such a difficult task to try and take it all away.
And the Cannons, once they do get these open opportunities, I mentioned Donville had a number of them on the crease, they're going to have to can them. You know, if you can't properly defend that Whip Snakes offense and the field is so tilted because of Nardella, it might become a shootout, and they're going to have to be really efficient with their offense. I think you mentioned in one of your game recaps a few weeks back, I forget who it was against. I might have been the Water Dogs that had to be super efficient, and they were, kind of deal. But
yeah, and that
those are the keys, I think, for the Cannons.
Yeah, totally agree.
Moving on to Chaos, what are the biggest priorities against this Atlas Hungry Bulls team?
I think if the Chaos win, it's a situation where like Josh Byrne has like 7 points on the day type of a thing, where like, and it could happen. It totally could. Like, I think he's right now, for my money, the most dynamic player, like any single player, he's the most dynamic, whether it's Dodger score or feeder, like he's my number one.
Would you rather have him? Cause this is the appropriate game to ask him or Teet.
Man,
I got a lot of flack for ranking Teet outside of my top 10 after the season last year, because he, like, you know, almost led the league. He led the league in points per game as a rookie. But, you know, Byrne, I thought, deserved, not that it's only between them for the top 10, but it's like, I forget how it shook out, but.
Yeah, no, I think like
he carried his squad to that.
It's type. Also like they just play in such different ways that, like, I wouldn't classify Teet necessarily as dynamic. Like, he's excellent and pinpoint and high IQ and like savvy and slick, but I don't know if I necessarily tag him with dynamic, where like
he makes everything look so
easy. So true, whereas like Josh Byrne doesn't necessarily make it like look easy, but at no point
he makes everything look super hard. He's
the biggest difference. But it's always like just spectacular. And so I could see a situation where he's like, my team's like got their backs against the wall. He's known it all week. You know, didn't necessarily have his greatest performance last week against the Chrome with JT Giles Harris. And then I also thought that they were really smart pulling lefties. So they decided, like, regardless of who ran out of the box as a righty, that they were going to pull the lefty so that you never ended up with bad switches over on that left side for Big Littles with a lefty and Josh Byrne. But it means that your short sticks are going to have to guard Dane Smith. So if they see that look again, like, I guess the answer is they're going to have to kind of pull a page out of the Whip Snakes book. And like, if things aren't working on the left side, they're going to have to be able to go to the right side and like really dominate, not just like to get things going to then get the left, but to be scorers over there. And so it'll be interesting to see exactly how it all plays out. I think that was a smart decision last week. I think the Atlas would be wise to do the same thing this week. But we'll see exactly what they do.
The goalie, how the lower extremity injury to Blaze affects him will be interesting to follow. Jack Kincannon's been his patented self from inside, stuffing inside shots and then letting in the outside shots, but. Yeah, I'm excited for this weekend, Dan. This was fun breaking it all down for all you listeners. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back hopefully with a guest next week. Dan, we've got tons to talk about with end of season awards coming up. I've got tons of takes for you. I'm seeing some of the MVP takes coming up recently, and there's a lot on my mind. I'll leave it at that. We'll
foreshadow that out for there next week. For the world.
Yeah. I got some thoughts. So Thanks again. Like and subscribe if you like what you heard, and share with some friends, and turn on the PLL games with whoever company you find yourself in this weekend. Have a great weekend. PLL season almost done. Let's get
peace and love, people.